Welcome to the Allowed Podcast. I'm Louise Steinman, curator of the Allowed series, presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles. Allowed is a series of dynamic lectures, readings, performances, and discussions that take place in the Mark Taper Auditorium at the historic Downtown Central Library in the heart of Los Angeles. To learn more about Allowed and learn how you can help the Library Foundation of Los Angeles support the Los Angeles Public Library, please go to our website, www.alloudla.org. The Allowed program you're about to hear was produced in 2009.
Without further ado, I'd like to turn things over to Tim Whalen, director of the Getty Conservation Institute. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Whalen.
Thank you very much, Justin. A pleasure to be with you all this afternoon here downtown. It's nice to get off the hill in Brentwood, and we're really happy to be here with our colleagues from the Library Foundation, so thank you very much. I think you all know that the Getty Conservation works in many, many places around the world, and we've worked in Egypt, we work in Egypt, we work in China, we work in many, many places, including the city of Los Angeles. And one of the we know two things, I think, that always kind of causes us to succeed. And that is, one, working in partnership with extraordinary organizations. We can't succeed unless we work with partners. And in this undertaking for this historic resource survey, we're working with the City of Los Angeles, naturally, the Department of Planning, the City Council, the Chief Legislative Analyst's Office. We're working with the Los Angeles Conservancy, and we're working with the National Trust for Historic Preservation, and all of these organizations with us are helping advance what I think is becoming an extraordinary project here in LA. The second thing we know is we can't preserve and conserve things unless we know where they are and what they are, and that's the whole point of this survey. And I think many of you probably wonder, does anything good ever come out of jury duty? And why is he asking that question? Does anything good ever come out of jury duty? About 10 years ago, I was on jury duty, and I had lunch with a friend of mine and a person who's become a dear colleague, and that's Catherine Welsh Howe, whom you'll hear from in a second. And we were having lunch over here at the little cafe at Mocha, and we started talking about the fact that Los Angeles really didn't have a survey of its historic resources, and it got us both thinking. And it was really at that lunch that this project was born. And I started further conversations with Catherine and further conversations with Linda Dishman, who's the executive director, as you know, of the LA Conservancy, that there was, in fact, a real opportunity for us here. And so I would say it was at that lunch at that little cafe at Mocha where this project was born. And I can't tell you how pleased I am to see the progress we've made, again, with extraordinary partners. So let me get off the stage quickly here, but introduce my friend and colleague, Catherine Welsh Howe, who's principal of KWH Associates here in town, a firm that specializes in historic resources and historic preservation, adaptive reuse, and real estate development. Catherine has worked with us on this project for the past 10 years, and there's no doubt that without her leadership and tenacity and wits, we wouldn't be here today. So let me introduce Catherine Welsh Howe.
That was some lunch, as you can imagine. I think it's time for one of us to have jury duty again and have lunch. Great, the panel is coming out, and it is fantastic to see all of you here today. A wonderful day to celebrate Survey LA, and I know that you know the purpose of being here today is for you to learn about the Citywide Historic Resource Survey and how you can contribute information about your property and your neighborhood to the survey, as well as how you can use the survey to benefit your preservation work and your own community. So Anna asked me to speak about two things today. First, why the Getty thought it was important to have a historic resource survey, and the process I led for the Getty Conservation Institute up to the point of the city taking on the survey. So I hope these highlights will set the stage for the outstanding panel that we have and will illuminate the groundwork that was laid for the launch of Survey Los Angeles. So in true LA fashion, let's have a flashback to the year 2000, the time at which we started working on the survey. There was already considerable momentum in Los Angeles in historic preservation. Buildings that had been previously slated for demolition, such as the very one we're in, the Central Library, the May Company building, the former Cathedral of St. Viviana, were being restored and reused. Developers in downtown Los Angeles, such as Ira Yellen, Tom Gilmore, CIM Group, were rehabbing empty and underutilized buildings, creating alternatives to suburban and beach living for young professionals and others. More than 50,000 tourists and shoppers were visiting the historic areas of the city, Olvera Street, Chinatown, Little Tokyo, Watts, and San Pedro, each day and earning local businesses in excess of $200 million per year. Diverse neighborhoods throughout the city, such as Highland Park, Carthay Circle, Pico Union, West Adams, and others were organizing themselves to protect and enhance the unique character of their homes and their neighborhoods by creating HPOZs, Los Angeles Historic Districts, our Historic Preservation Overlay Zones. Hundreds of people each week were going on tours and attending lectures about Los Angeles, offered by a multiplicity of groups and businesses. And remarkably, more people in Los Angeles belonged and still belong to a historic preservation organization than in any other city in the country, our own Los Angeles Conservancy. So it was clear at that point that that historic preservation was not just a passing nostalgic whim, but rather there was something deeper going on. It was really an expression of the people of Los Angeles to focus the present and shape the future by respecting and integrating the past. But Los Angeles needed a critical tool in order to harness this energy and enthusiasm. And that tool, as Tim and I were talking that fateful day at lunch, was a historic resource survey, a comprehensive survey of the city's historic buildings, sites, districts, and areas. There was some background to the survey. The idea for a survey was incorporated in the city's first preservation ordinance in 1962. In a wonderful kind of ironic way, Los Angeles had one of the country's first citywide preservation organization, one that was very farsighted in not only looking at architecture but also cultural heritage. So the Los Angeles Cultural Heritage Ordinance incorporated a call for a citywide survey. Didn't happen then, but it had been on every preservation agenda since 1962. At the same time, the Getty and the Getty Conservation Institute, in 20 years, had become an internationally recognized resource for conservation. And its interest in the citywide survey was twofold. As Tim said, it saw the survey as a continuation of the very important role the Getty was playing in Los Angeles through wide-ranging grants, internships, and other programs that were given to projects and organizations representing the diverse heritage of the city. And second, through its work around the world, the Getty saw the value of historic resource surveys as the foundation, the fundamental first step in historic preservation and effective community planning, whether that was in London or Paris or Los Angeles. And the Getty and Tim recognized that the lack of a survey in LA could be inhibiting preservation and revitalization efforts. So in 2000, they hired me to examine ways that Los Angeles could initiate and sustain a comprehensive survey. That work evolved through three stages. The first step was a feasibility study, which in which we, and the purpose of that was to assess the purpose and value of a historic resource survey in Los Angeles and to assess the level of support. The last thing we wanted was for this study to be sitting on a shelf or any work to be sitting on a shelf. We involved a wide range of people and organizations, elected and government officials, developers, planners, architects, real estate brokers, preservationists, economists, neighborhood leaders, the full range of those involved in land use, including intentionally, some of those who might be in opposition to the idea. We wanted them to have a deeper understanding of contemporary preservation, the role of a historic resource survey, and to be fully informed about how the survey would affect the city, their constituents, and them. So this six-month assessment considered current survey practices in Los Angeles. We reviewed comparable experiences in other cities, New York, Chicago, Denver, Dallas, Seattle, range of other cities. And we developed a framework to address the challenges in Los Angeles, particularly because of its size, scope, the methods of the survey were going to be crucial. We found that the support for the survey was strong and deep. Government officials spoke about having a reliable source of information on the historic on the city's historic properties. I vividly remember Jack Weiss saying, "I can figure out everything in my district except what is historic." And Jimmy Hahn, the then mayor, reflecting upon his work as mayor and as city attorney, said, "If only we had had this survey 20 years ago, what the city would have looked like and how it would have lessened the conflicts." So government officials really wanted a reliable source of information. Community groups and investors wanted predictability in planning and the development in the planning and development process. Preservationists and educators envisioned expanding awareness and the use of the city's heritage. And everyone wanted to reduce the 11th hour crisis mode of historic preservation in Los Angeles. The assessment confirmed the value of the city's heritage, both as cultural and economic assets, and it also documented the fact that only 15% of the city had been surveyed, and most important, that a historic resource survey of this scale was feasible. So the GCI published the assessment report. You'll see this. It's on both Survey LA and the Getty's website. And in 2002, presented the material to a broad-based group of stakeholders. The next day, there were city council members at that presentation. The next day, the city council responded by passing a motion enlisting the Getty's help in developing the goals of a citywide historic resource survey and an effective municipal preservation program. So we then began the second collaborative phase of the process. With the Getty and the city working together. And both the city and the Getty agreed that the highest professional standards would be employed for the survey, and that the data forthcoming from the survey must be accessible both to city departments and to the public. The GCI agreed to prepare 8 white papers setting forth the components of the survey and to review those with city staff. In 2004, the City Council convened the general managers and senior staff of the 13 departments in the city that deal with land use for a series of 3 meetings to determine the potential value of the survey to their work. So using a best practices model and case studies, the papers and discussions addressed the use of National Register survey standards and professionally accepted historic resource criteria, the role of a historic context statement in ensuring consistent evaluations for all types of buildings and districts, the value of uniting historic resource data with other property data, with other municipally maintained property data, and making this central repository easily accessible for the public and public agency, essentially building off the planning department's geographic information system, ZIMIS, or the Zoning Information and Map Access System. And most important was the discussion of engaging Angelenos in the survey. as it will be they, it will be you, who will preserve the part of Los Angeles that is most important to you. I keep saying, who knows where the next great preservation tools are going to emerge? I think it's going to be out of the survey. So these papers provided a roadmap through the often challenging requirements and technical components of a survey undertaken on such an enormous scale. We revised these for publications, and the GCI has recently published this very beautiful report, which is also, again, online. During this time, we also published a guidebook to incentives for the preservation and rehabilitation of historic homes in LA, so property owners would know the benefits available to them and how to access these incentives. Following the endorsement, the unanimous endorsement of the research papers by the general managers, the third phase began, implementation. The Los Angeles City Council unanimously passed a series of resolutions further advancing the city's commitment to pursuing a survey. The Office of Historic Resources in the Department of City Planning was born and funding committed. In response to this expression of leadership, in 2005, the Getty Foundation extended a matching grant commitment to the city for a survey over a 5-year period. The city agreed to match this commitment and has since hired professional staff, Ken Bernstein and Janet Hansen, who's here somewhere, who are the two people in the Office of Historic Resources, who are the two principals managing the project. They've selected consultants and taken significant steps to implement the survey. The Office of Historic Resources is conducting the survey with consultants, and the GCI will continue to provide research and technical and advisory assistance throughout the course of the project. So during this time, this brings us to today, momentum for historic preservation has continued to grow. Hundreds of millions of dollars have been successfully invested in reusing buildings, creating much-needed new housing, and whole new communities, downtown, in Hollywood, Studio City, Mid-Wilshire, and really all over the city. Los Angeles is becoming an international tourist destination, particularly for those interested in mid-century modernism and post-war visual arts. Cultural tourism has more than doubled since 2000, and visiting historic sites is cited as the primary reason for these trips, according to the Los Angeles Convention and Visitors Bureau. There are now 24 HPOZs, with 15 more in the queue, from Vinegar Hill in Wilmington to Van Nuys in the Valley. And these are neighborhoods and commercial districts of great architectural, economic, and social diversity. Tremendous work has been done by the Conservancy, the Japanese American National Museum, and others in researching the rich legacy of ethnic heritage sites, and this will only continue to grow with the survey. So, this project has been a large, long, and complex commitment, and the Getty, especially Tim and the GCI, and the City Council have seen it through and seen it clearly every step of the way. They truly deserve our appreciation for their vision, leadership, and sustained support of the survey. Survey LA will be an incredibly rich resource in focusing the energy and enthusiasm for historic preservation and extending it to all parts of the city, and in guiding the planning, maintenance, and investment in historic properties by owners, city officials, and investors. It will also have the very, very tangible benefit of raising civic pride and care for the heritage and beauty of this great city. And in a wonderful kind of full circle way, it's a rather fitting coincidence that the Cultural Heritage Ordinance will reach its 50th birthday just at about the time the survey is completed. So with this kickoff, we are beginning the celebration of 50 years of preservation in Los Angeles. So happy birthday, Los Angeles. Let's party. Justin?
Thank you. This afternoon's panel discussion will be moderated by none other than Southern California's own Larry Mantle. Larry Mantle, in case you didn't somehow you didn't know, is host of 89.3 KPCC's Air Talk, a daily interview call-in program that airs weekday mornings on KPCC from 10 until noon. Mantle started Air Talk in 1985, which has become to date the longest continuously running daily talk show program in the LA radio market. Air Talk guests have included leaders in science, health, social debate, history, entertainment, politics, and the arts. Coupled with telephone participation in the way of audience call-in by our highly sophisticated Southern California public radio audience. Mantle also hosts the movie review and interview program Film Week on Air Talk, heard every Friday at 11 a.m. on KPCC. In April of 2005, Angel City Press published This Is Air Talk, 20 Years of Conversations on 89.3, featuring interviews of 21 of Larry's favorite guests over the first two decades of the program. The LA Times bestseller includes conversations with Jimmy Carter, Steve Martin, Milton Berle, Walter Mosley, Jack Welch, and Sting. Larry Mantle's Air Talk has won numerous Golden Mike, Associated Press, and Los Angeles Press Club awards, including Best Talk Show. Mantle earned a BA in psychology from Vanguard University in Costa Mesa, California. He is a fourth-generation Southern Californian residing in Pasadena with his wife, Kristen, and their seven-year-old son, Desmond. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Larry Mantle to the Los Angeles Central Library.
Thank you very much. Like you, I love Los Angeles, as you just heard Justin say. My family goes way back. And I want to ask, first of all, how many here are native Angelenos? Hands in the air. Whoa. How many of you came to Southern California, have fallen in love with it, and that's why you're here, because you care about our architectural heritage? How many of you? Almost equal number. I think you folks really deserve particular applause. It's easy for us who have a lifelong or multi-generational investment in Southern California. But for those of you who've come here and you've said, this place is really unique. I don't know anywhere else that's like this. Architecturally, the cultural mix. You know, when we boomed from the earliest residents, the Californios, through the turn of the century migration, through the post-World War II settlement here, all the different folks that have come to Southern California have made this, I think, a remarkable place. And we should be justly proud of how we have all lived together, not always fairly, not always equitably, but I think finally we're starting to see some of the promise of what a city like Los Angeles can present with its mix of people. Equally so, the promise of cultural, artistic, and architectural greatness. Los Angeles is, of course, an architectural center. That's why people come here to see the remarkable structures that we have in so many different eras, particularly of the 20th century, that are represented. But for many of our gems, as we've been hearing so far from Catherine and as you've seen in the presentations out here, they're hidden. We who've lived here our whole lives don't even necessarily know where they are, as perhaps we haven't used the city as thoroughly as we ideally would. So this is a great opportunity for us to talk about how we as Angelenos, who care about our community, who care not just about great architecture and historically significant buildings, as important as they are, but buildings that have a great cultural significance because of who lived there or what was done there or what community was centered around that structure. So with that in mind, I'd like to introduce our panelists who are going to talk with us about this rich heritage we have and what all of us can do to help make sure it's preserved. Ken Bernstein is manager of the City of Los Angeles' Office of Historic Resources. He directs historic preservation policies, but for many years, he was the director of preservation issues for the Los Angeles Conservancy. And I remember when Ken told me that he was going to the City of Los Angeles, I was so disappointed because what he had done at the Conservancy, I was so impressed by, and I worried in a city bureaucracy, would you really be able to make the same kind of difference? He said, well, I'm certainly hopeful, and I'm very optimistic. And now coming to fruition, this survey, it's great to see this as a chance to really implement an important policy for the city. We are also joined by Adrienne Biondo. She chairs, or she is chairman emeritus of the LA Conservancy's Modern Committee, which, of course, mid-century Los Angeles, a huge part of our architectural heritage. She's a lover of that. She's an award-winning preservationist and advocate. She has really spearheaded the historic preservation overlay zone for the Balboa Highlands Eichler Tract in Granada Hills. If you saw the video, you saw incredible examples. I have to admit, I was totally ignorant of this tract and the great architecture there in a beautiful neighborhood. So she really was much of the impetus for this. She is a public relations liaison for California Modern, an architectural lifestyle magazine as well. William Deverell is a longtime friend of mine. Bill is at the Huntington as well as the University of Southern California and Caltech. He has worked at numerous institutions here. He's an American historian with a focus on 19th and 20th century American West. He's written books on political, social, ethnic, and environmental history, and he's currently working on a book exploring the history of the post-Civil War American West. He directs the Huntington USC Institute on California and the West. Michael Diaz was raised in Lincoln Heights, and that's particularly important because he has taken his hometown neighborhood truly to heart. He has worked as a secondary and adult school teacher. He's copy edited in New York. He's been a writer producer of educational programming, but he came back to Los Angeles and moved into one of his family's properties, which is an 1898 Queen Anne cottage, which he's restored in Lincoln Heights. So this is a true labor of love for him. He's also on numerous boards, too many for me to mention, but he founded the Lincoln Heights Neighborhood and Preservation Association. He's on the board of the LA Conservancy. He chairs the Lincoln Heights HPOZ board as well, numerous other boards. And Mott Smith, who is the co-founder of Civic Enterprise, which builds and comes up with innovative, replicable, socially conscious projects in emerging neighborhoods of Southern California. They work with cities, redevelopment agencies, and community organizations to create higher quality urban environments. And often that means doing things that might be a bit experimental to try and take best opportunity of a particular property. For example, one of their most recent projects is under the LA City Townhouse Ordinance Project with compact single-family homes on fee simple small lots. He's also worked for LA Unified as acting director for planning, so he knows the institutional side of things as well. And he was founding executive director of New Schools, Better Neighborhoods, an LA-based nonprofit. Let's hear it for our panel, and we'll get started with our conversation. Well, folks, let's launch right in and talk about why this is so important. Ken, how is this really, as a practical matter, going to make a difference if we have some big, long list in a database of these culturally and architecturally significant properties?
Yes, thanks. Well, thank you, Larry, first of all, for the great introduction. And I want to first just thank everyone for coming out today. And, you know, when we talked about doing a citywide event for Survey LA, often in historic preservation circles, sometimes it feels like we're talking to the same people, but we've had a tremendous outpouring today, people who are interested in historic preservation. And I think that speaks to, you know, why this is so important. Here in Los Angeles, as Tim and Catherine have already mentioned, we really don't know what we have. I think, you know, we have an established historic preservation program. We have 950 city historic cultural monuments or local landmarks. We have those 25 historic districts or historic preservation overlay zones. But most of the city is, from the Getty's research, still essentially a blank slate.
Is this unusual? I mean, is LA sort of alone in that we haven't appreciated our history enough to do this, or is this pretty common?
I think, to some degree, you know, Los Angeles is now maturing as a city. We are coming of age, and we're beginning to take stock of our past and our historic architecture in a way that we haven't previously. In many cities, a historic resources survey precedes the development of protections for historic resources, such as local landmarking or historic districts. Because again, as Tim mentioned, you need to know what's out there. You need to know what you have before you can take steps to protect it. We did that backwards. And as Catherine mentioned, in 1962, when we passed our cultural heritage ordinance, there was an intention signaled in that ordinance to go do a survey. But it never happened. And one of the reasons for that is that we are just such a large city. And without the support and partnership of the Getty, it wouldn't be possible. And we point out in the video that we're showing today, you know, we're a city of 880,000 separate legal parcels. It's a huge task to begin to document what and where the historic resources are in a city that size, 465 square miles.
Bill, let me ask you as a historian, what are the things that are truly exceptional about Los Angeles compared to other cities that make this, in your view, of consequence to do something 3 years long, this investment of resources, and this amount of call on the public to be involved?
I would say, Larry, that in some respects, the lack of historic consciousness here in LA that this survey is going to help address may not be that different than other places. With the one kind of interesting exception that everyone in the room here is familiar with, this notion that Los Angeles has no history. It's a ridiculous notion, and we hear it all the time, usually from people who don't live here. This survey, that won't go away, that notion, that stereotypical caricature of this place, but this survey offers a really magnificent tool by which to fight that. And so there's an exceptional quality there about the perception of Los Angeles as a historyless place, which this survey and really the people of Los Angeles will help address in a pretty magnificent way from the ground up, from the neighborhoods up, from the built environment up. So that's particularly thrilling.
Well, Bill, I mean, how much of this history has been, and no offense meant, but, you know, guys who look like us, as opposed to people who've come from longstanding communities of color in Los Angeles who might not have felt included in that conversation, might not have even necessarily thought about historic lines. I mean, they know their family's history here, but it's a personal history. It's not necessarily a place history in their minds.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. The other thing this survey will help address is in the history business that I'm in, we run into people all the time who say, well, there's no particular interest in this little neighborhood, is there? Or there's no interest in my family. You know, my family wasn't important. And that's absolutely wrong, you know, in the sense that historians like myself, what we're interested in are the vernacular everyday lives of people and the structures they lived in and the structures they moved around in. So part of the survey's ambition is to reach out, listen, and look into neighborhoods that have previously not been listened to or looked at. And that's thrilling.
Well, if I could jump
in here.
I really found that interesting in Lincoln Heights. Lincoln Heights, which is primarily a working class neighborhood and also predominantly Latino, now heavily Asian, becoming Asian. So there's a nice mixture of Latino, Asian, and others. And I found it really interesting that when we started looking to the historic nature of the neighborhood, there was really a groundswell of interest because we noticed that and there was a city project, unfortunately, that was doing rehab work and giving low interest rate loans to the homeowners. And people started stuccoing wood-framed homes. Lincoln Heights, if you don't know the neighborhood, has a really interesting mixture of housing stock, Victorian up through, I guess, there's very little contemporary architecture, but it's not just one style. And people were destroying these homes. So a group of us banded together to protest that. And finally a survey was done, and there was a lot of interest there.
What connected to that interest? What was the trigger that people who were, you know, busy trying to support themselves financially, raising their kids, that they said, okay, I'll give some time?
Well, I think they saw that the neighborhood was deteriorating. It wasn't really improving; it was deteriorating. And so then, fortunately, we embarked on trying to get an HPOZ, and we did get a lot of support from the LA Conservancy in that respect. And also from the councilman, at the time, at now who is still there, is Councilman Ed Reyes, and he fully supported it. So there needs to be, so I think there's a myth that historic preservation and interest in it is only in your
a white person
in higher income neighborhoods. There is really a great interest in all neighborhoods. And in fact, even now, people from El Sereno are upset that we have an HPOZ and they don't have one.
Well, and just real quickly, because a lot of us aren't familiar with what an HPOZ actually does, has it made a difference having this preservation overlay zone? Has it protected properties? Has it created conflict with some homeowners or developers who want to have more leeway on what they're doing? What's been the result?
Well, from my point of view, the result has been good. I know that there's some people that are upset that there are some guidelines that need to be followed. But in the long run, I think that they appreciate it, especially I'm recalling one case that we had. The gentleman came in, and we didn't approve what he was trying to do. And after the guidance that the board did give him, he came up to me. He lives around the corner from my house, and he said, you know, I really appreciate what you did for us. We couldn't have done this on our own.
Adrian, I want to ask you a similar thing with establishing this preservation zone for your neighborhood in Granada Hills. What was it that got people galvanized? Because that may connect to what this survey is attempting to do. People to say or feel that they have enough stake in it that you get more than just the usual preservation community really active.
I think what really galvanized our community was our Modern Committee's tour back in the year 2000, our How Modern Was My Valley tour. And that was the very first time that the Eichlers were actually
Love
on a tour.
That title.
And I think there were people that we invited to be on the tour at the time who were surprised that they had a historic home. And some of them just had preserved their home because it was lovely and they thought it was, you know, the quintessential California home, but didn't realize that it actually had a pedigree. So I think at that point, people started seeing that we clocked like 600 people coming through our house that year. And then people started seeing that there was interest on the outside and they had something special.
So in the idea, wow, the Valley really has great architecture, which, again, is one of those things that people don't at the top of their head think about. But they're incredible districts in the San Fernando Valley of great history. Maude, as a developer, do you see potential problems with a survey like this within the development community that people are going to feel constrained by it?
You know, it depends on your orientation. If you are sort of the old school bulldoze and throw up a stucco box style of developer, I think this might seem problematic to you. Although the reality is, even if you're that kind of developer, it's hard to see why the survey wouldn't be a good thing, because it's sort of an early warning that you might have problems down the line if you try to mess with a building that might have some value. If you're the other sort of developer who actually, more as Catherine mentioned, Ira Yellen, Tom Gilmore, Wayne Ratkovich could be added to that list, people who understand that they are part of building the history of Los Angeles today and enlivening the history of Los Angeles through finding new economic uses for the in-place buildings, the survey can only be a good thing. One, because it highlights what's there that we might be missing, and two, every development project ultimately is a story, and knowing the big context and knowing the first three chapters of the story kind of helps you write the next one.
Well, and even from a marketing standpoint, I've seen properties where they take the history of it. It may look totally different than what it did historically, but they'll borrow from the name. They'll try and evoke the sense of place that was there at one time. So developers love to use history when it suits the purposes of selling units in the building.
Sure, and even if you wanted to take a less cynical view of it,
I'm a journalist. I can't help it.
No, I understand. I understand. Very much along those lines. One of the things that my company is extremely interested in is authenticity in building. And this is really elusive, right? And I have researched, well, I've asked some of my architect and some of my conservancy friends, why is it, if I built a fake Spanish building now, everybody would say, that's a fake Spanish building. Mm-hmm. But if I built a fake Spanish building in 1926, people say, my goodness, that's a beautiful, authentic, fake Spanish building. And, the answer, the best working answer that this group of people I've been talking with have come up with is it's the craftsmanship. But it's not the same. Normally when people hear that, they think, ah, people don't know how to do stucco anymore. We don't have good carpenters anymore, tile guys. That's not true. The difference is it's the way we do building now versus the way we did building then. Then an architect would design an entire building on 3 sheets of paper. If there was a significant detail, they'd draw it. But the building was finished as kind of an improvisation by these craftsmen. It was a social improvisation. And it's very difficult to replicate that now. However, when you're dealing with an existing structure where you're doing adaptive reuse, you have to do it as that kind of structured improvisation. And so you kind of have authenticity built in, and that's worth more than gold.
I had no idea that went on. Well, part of the potential conflict, it would seem to me, with developers is over what the criteria are that are being used for determining a place as significant. So what are the thresholds for placement on this list that the city is compiling? Are there going to be different levels of consideration? Quickly walk us through that.
Sure. Well, we have taken care in this project not to try to invent our own idiosyncratic criteria. There have been some citywide surveys in other cities around the country that came up with their own kind of hierarchy of historic identification, and we have taken care, again, through some of the guidance of the Getty, to rely upon existing standards, so criteria that already exist for the National Register of Historic Places, the California Register of Historical Resources, and our local Historic Cultural Monument Program or Historic Preservation Overlay Zone. So what we are doing through the survey is identifying potential eligibility for designation. I want to emphasize, again, this gets to the perceptions among developers and property owners. I want to emphasize that we are not, through the survey, actually designating historic resources. We are identifying the potential for designation and using that information as a planning tool. There are separate processes to actually go ahead and nominate a building at a federal, state, or local level or a district as a historic preservation overlay zone, and a great deal of community input, community outreach and involvement that takes place around those designations. This is meant to provide information to everyone in the process, and I agree with Mott, it's far better. The savvy developers know that if they have the information up front, they can make appropriate decisions well before they've committed money or committed 6 months or a year to a project and past the point of no return.
So you're going to be seeing properties that are documented meeting these particular thresholds,
right,
such as the Department of Interior's national standards.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be on the National Register, for example.
It won't be listed. There are survey status codes. There's some numerical codes that are assigned to properties and that, for those who understand how survey works, convey information, eligibility at a national, state, or local level. A building or place can be significant for its architecture, as an excellent example of an architectural style. It can be significant for its historic associations, for important events that took place there, associations with important individuals, for its role in social movements, as we've talked about, cultural significance, and for trends in history. So there are multiple levels, multiple criteria that can be met, and if one or more of those is met, a potential resource can be identified.
What are you asking all of us to do here? I mean, you're going to have professional surveyors, people who are trained in this, to go out into communities over these 3 years to identify important, significant places. What role does that leave for us?
Yeah, great question. You know, the professionals will be conducting the survey. The reason for that, many surveys in the past were conducted by volunteers. For a citywide survey of the scope of this project, we need to have objectivity and consistency across the entire city. So it's important that the final decisions, the final evaluations, be made by professionally trained architectural historians, historic preservation professionals. But there is a tremendous role for the community, and we're calling that really what we're calling today's event, My Historic LA. What we want more than anything is for you as community members to tell us what is your historic LA, what is a place in your community that you think is significant. And we believe that it's likely that the architectural historians that are going to be conducting the survey will find the grandiose architectural landmarks quite easily. They pop out at anyone who's trained in the field. What doesn't pop out is those other layers that we've talked about, the social and cultural history, the modest place down the street that was a neighborhood hangout for decades, a place that was associated by someone who contributed to the growth and development of a community. So we're going to be, as we go throughout the city over the next 3 years and we conduct survey activity, we're going to be doing this geographically by what we call community plan areas. So each year we'll be doing about 11 or 12 areas of the city over the next 3 years. We'll be going out and having discussions much like what we're having today at a citywide level and asking community members to get engaged and to tell us about those places of deep significance and meaning. And we also want people to become volunteers and neighborhood liaisons and be part of that effort when we come to your individual
community. How are you going to let people know about this?
Well, this I think we've done a good job today. We're really pleased by the response today. And we have a website at surveyla.org where we're getting continual input. We have an interactive form called My Historic LA on our website. We're going to be working with certified neighborhood councils in Los Angeles. We have 90 neighborhood councils that have an established advisory role, and we'll be working very closely with all those neighborhood councils in each of the areas, historical societies, business groups. But we really need neighborhood representatives or liaisons, coordinators at a neighborhood level, to do this with us, to do this type of outreach, to have events at a local level that may look something like what we've done here today, but to get at that at a local level to make sure that we are not missing anything when we get to your neighborhood.
I was going to add on to that.
Yeah, Michael.
I really do think this is a good first step. The next step is to have this information trickle down into the neighborhoods, into the communities, because there's still a lot of misunderstanding and misinformation about what historic preservation is. And when there is some objection to the HPOZ or what we're doing in, say, Lincoln Heights, I make it a point to let people know that we're not trying to create a Disneyland. We're not mimicking the past, but we are trying to preserve it and maintain it.
Bill, let me ask you again, as a historian, what do you see as other advantages aside from having this registry of neighborhoods and properties? Is there something interpersonally advantageous?
Oh, sure. I can envision myself and other colleagues who train graduate students who work on dissertations that address LA history telling our graduate students to follow this project literally, to just sort of watch it and follow it, because the amount of material that's going to emerge from people's attics, closets, memories, filing cabinets is going to be astonishing. And you know, the truth is about Los Angeles history, they're really, while the history is deep and complex and fascinating, there isn't as much written about the history of Los Angeles as this city and all of us deserve. And so the amount of material that's likely to emerge through this project will be the raw stuff from which many, many histories ought to be written. And so that's really quite remarkable. And the oral historical data. You know, tell me about your neighborhood. How long have you been here? Who moved here when? Why? It's really going to be something.
Well, and it reminds me a bit of a project done right here at the library, and that is Shades of L.A., Carolyn Cole's photographic look. If you're not familiar with this, it's a remarkable project where people from all different parts of Los Angeles contributed family photographs to give a sense of what Angelenos in all their diversity looked like from the very earliest settlement of the community here. And it was a huge exhibition, a book that came out of it, archive now here at the library. This, to me, is very reminiscent.
It's very similar, I think, in that way. And what's challenging about a survey like this is the obligation to be quite nimble, in the sense that the survey and its philosophical underpinnings have to have a sense of what's out there, have to have some sense of going for this or going for that, or the landscape's going to look like this, etc., to organize the thing. But at the same time, it has to be nimble enough to be surprised. And Shades of LA was very much like that. There was a sense and a belief that the photographic history of people's families here in Los Angeles was deep, rich, and fascinating. And yet, they were still remarkably surprised at how rich and deep it was. So the survey is going to be the same kind of thing, I think.
I want to risk our eyes glazing over because there are just a couple of things I think we need to explain, or at least I feel like I need more explanation on, at the risk of getting into bureaucratese here. Citywide historic context statement. This is something that the city, what is that and how does that relate to this project?
Okay. I guess I tend to think about it as essentially the intellectual and conceptual framework for the actual survey work in the field. The citywide context statement is meant to essentially distill down everything that we know about Los Angeles's architecture, its history, important patterns of development, and the themes that shape what's on the ground today in Los Angeles. Kind of distill that down into a form that is usable to guide good survey decisions by the professionals in the field. So we are doing this, again, with the guidance of the Getty, which had recommended, and this is increasingly good preservation practice, because you can only really identify why a building or a place is significant if you understand the important context and themes that shaped the development of a place. We have started through the development of a citywide context statement. That has been a major undertaking, so some of that work is still ongoing. Initially, we had hoped that perhaps that would be all wrapped up by the time we started our pilot surveys. We have done the work on that context statement that is necessary to shape the work that's going on in the field right now.
Can you give me an example of what it might sound like, or what is this going to be different for different parts of the city, or is it a citywide context?
It's largely a citywide context statement. And so it is developing specific context. It is divided chronologically into chapters by different periods of our history, and then developing specific context related to our growth and development that could include, for example, modernism as one of the major contexts that's being developed, and developing a theme around entertainment history and resources related to the entertainment community.
So this would explain where these aspects of the development of the city fit into the broader picture.
That's right. So it would be explaining essentially why, what were the forces that shaped the development of the city, and then give some guidance as to how that evolved and what is still on the ground. And then we take it a step further where we are developing, we have a context at a very broad level, themes beneath that, and then individual property types. What are the specific types of properties that you see on the ground today, and what qualities do they still need to retain, if you come across one today, to be considered eligible for potential designation? Again, we're not designating, but what qualities do they need to have in terms of association with those contexts and what we call integrity? What alterations or what changes could have occurred that are acceptable or not acceptable that would allow it to still be eligible for potential designation?
All right.
So that work, we've been working with a team of consultants to prepare that historic context statement, and it will be shaping the survey work to come. It is very much what Bill just mentioned, which is a sense of we're doing a lot of upfront work in order to kind of establish this framework for good decision making in the field, but we want to leave that sense of discovery in the mix. And so there is that tension. We've tried to do some work up front, but the field work, the pilot surveys that we're doing right now, are informing changes to the context statement, and vice just as the context statement will be informing the survey decisions.
Yeah, ultimately where this information is going to be housed. Catherine mentioned the ZEMA system the city has. So if we all want to stay in touch as this is being developed, and as then there are the survey is finished 3 years from now or thereabouts, where are we going to be able to go? How are we going to be able to access to learn more ourselves?
Well, the best place is really our website, surveyla.org, which is a portal to all this all that's happening with the survey events and public participation that will be happening around the survey, as well as the actual survey data once that's loaded into the database. So this will be a giant database on Los Angeles's historic resources. One of the groundbreaking aspects of this project is that traditionally, we've done some surveys in Los Angeles in the past, but they've typically been done. They were done with pencil and paper and clipboard and written up in a report, often with flowery architectural descriptions, thick binders. But those thick binders typically sat on a planner's shelf in City Hall, and they weren't accessible to the community. They weren't accessible to developers or people who needed to have that information. So the fact that you'll be able to go to surveyla.org, which will link to ZEMIS, and we'll tell you how to get into that. It'll it'll be a easy-to-use portal with that information. You'll be able to do a search for information on a particular property. Ultimately, we hope you'll be able to do searches for resources associated with a particular architect or that are significant under a particular theme. So it will be a very powerful tool that will be useful, again, not only to planners and city officials, but location scouts looking for particular types of resources, visitors with cultural tourism.
So be readily available. Adrian, I want to ask you about, since you've gone down this road with the tract that you've had designated as a historic zone, what are the potential pitfalls here? Because you've seen the good, bad, and the ugly, no doubt, of the process. This isn't about setting up a bunch of HBOZs. But in just doing this kind of work generally, what are the pitfalls?
Well, I think that the lack of understanding up front seems to be something of a hurdle that we've been able to overcome for the most part, I'd say, in Balboa Highlands. It's been a combination, though, of maybe more unusual techniques like promoting the area as a location for films, for commercials. And then when people see that their home was used in a commercial, say like the Windex commercial with the crows that everyone seems to know, or even seeing it on CSI New York or CSI Miami, then people see that and recognize the neighborhood and they start to kind of put the little jigsaw puzzle pieces together and see that this is actually something that's regarded more widely as an important piece of modernist architecture. So it seems like the understanding and the outreach to let people kind of grasp what their homes mean is something that we're overcoming.
Yeah, Michael, and then Bill.
All right,
yeah.
I'm sorry. I'd like to pick up on something that Ken was saying. How are we going to get this information to trickle down? And I'm sure you've thought about this, and I'm sure the Getty has thought about this also. I think that going to the schools is really important to the students, elementary and high school students, because you've got to captive audience there, and they certainly take the information back home. So I think that's a really quick way. You had talked about maybe going to the neighborhood councils. I'm a former board member of the Lincoln Heights Neighborhood Council, and that's just a small group of people. I think you get more bang for your buck if you go to the schools. So I'm sure you've thought about it, but if not, it's a suggestion.
Are there other places, like in your community, beyond the schools, or the gathering places where you'd say it really makes sense to try and connect with people?
We found the school was the best.
Okay.
I'd like to interject something it's very relevant. In Balboa Highlands, we launched a survey team that was comprised of 20 high school students from John F. Kennedy High School in Granada Hills. And they just completed the survey with the aid of Katie Horak and the Architectural Resources Group. And the survey is moving forward and eventually will go through a series of public workshops and hearings and be certified at the end. But it was thanks to the students, really, that survey was able to be completed. And it sent them off with the sense of wonder. Even though the school is only a few miles from our neighborhood, the students, many of them had never been to the neighborhood.
Sure.
And so we invited some of the homeowners to open their homes that day. Even though HPOZs only regard the exteriors, we invited them to come in some of the homes, and they really learned a lot that day. And some of them went on to decide to become architectural historians, and some built models of Eichlers. And so I think you're absolutely right about that. It's the students, and that's that they're going to carry the torch forward for us.
And I'd say that the mere fact that happens addresses one of the potential pitfalls of surveys like this, which is that you're so concerned with the built environment that you remove the people, and you don't think about the people that live there, or et cetera. But these documents and the philosophical approach to this project has got the people in it. Which is a real important thing, obviously. And the other pitfall is that the work is done in such a way that nostalgia gets privileged over history, and so that people start to think that the past was this golden age of sun-dappled life, like Mott's Mission Revival House from the 20s. And we obviously want to be careful with that because the past was complex and oftentimes ugly, and there's issues about the past that we all have to address. And so you want to be very careful that nostalgia is used sparingly. And we've seen it. The developers can use nostalgia cynically or otherwise, in very, very clever ways. And we've seen that. It's an attractive place to be in a nostalgic space. And the survey is constructed in a way to... History and nostalgia aren't the same thing, obviously, and it's more on the history side than the nostalgia side, and that's important, too.
I just want to make... I understand you're a scholar, Bill, and I absolutely respect that search for authenticity. At the same time, as someone who doesn't have to have those constraints, the myth also... is a part. I mean, this is
absolutely.
is a mythic
absolutely.
Place as well. And so, obviously, if the myth actually sidelines stories of real people and the hardships they endured and the lack of equity and fairness, that's a bad thing.
Right.
But at the same time, I want to make the case for the myth also being incorporated. As long as we know what it is, there's also great beauty in a lot of the vision, even if it didn't fully come true, for what Los Angeles was hoped it would become.
Absolutely, and that's true for probably everyone in this room. A weave in your own life of the hopes and optimism of being in Southern California. And so you don't want to at all take that off the table. So I agree.
Matt.
So, well, you asked what the pitfalls are.
I think
there's several pitfalls. One is, how is this information going to actually impact the built environment? And I think that there many of you probably know what CEQA is, the California Environmental Quality Act. And whenever you've got a project that requires a city discretionary action, the city has to say that they've complied with the Environmental Quality Act. And I suspect that anything that shows up in this survey, even if it's not actually completed as a landmark or a monument, that it will still trigger that additional level of Environmental Quality Act review, which, by the way, I think is a good thing because it means that you get the protections just from doing the survey. I think a pitfall, though, is, and I'm sure Ken has an answer for this, I just don't know what it is, who owns this information and who manages it and who guarantees the quality on an ongoing basis? Because if I'm a property owner and I accidentally have somebody put in a database that my property could be historic, that could trigger all kinds of additional problems for me that I wasn't anticipating. It could add expense and time and risk. It might not be legitimate. And so that's one issue I can think of.
All right. I wanted to ask about the Latino community, because I know that there's been a great deal with the African-American community around Central Avenue, South Los Angeles, Southwest LA, with Leimert Park and the Crenshaw District, to try and get at the important history there. My sense is of the Latino communities is that because so much of it's in unincorporated county area of East LA, that maybe there isn't as much that's been done to really try and capture the city of Los Angeles's Latino heritage. I mean, we've got the recreation at Olvera Street and things. But, Bill, do you have a sense of where we are in really understanding that the city proper's Latino history?
I think Michael probably knows more than I do about this in a sense, but the scholarly perception of ethnic Los Angeles and Latino Los Angeles is a real growth field. There's all kinds of scholarly work done on that. But the raw material, the documents, the photographs, et cetera, are a little fleeting. And so one of the real promises of a project like this is to bring those previously unknown, again, closeted documents and photographs and other things to bear.
Yeah, and the Latino community is changing also. It's evolving daily. Historically, it was dominated by Mexican families such as mine. It's now changing. There's great Central American and Brazilian community that's now here, and that's going to be part of the picture at some point.
One of the things the survey is going to reveal, too, is that certain neighborhood, as Ken pointed out, certain neighborhood gathering places, the continuity of those places is going to be compelling in the story, but the constituencies that gathered there will change color, ethnicity, nationality, et cetera. But that place, a business, a church, whatever, will still be a central place in those neighborhoods.
All right.
Well, quick thought here, because I know we kept talking about designating buildings, but you might go to a neighborhood like Lincoln Heights, which doesn't have many single buildings that could be designated, yet the neighborhood or sections of the neighborhood as a whole can be historic. So because a lot of people complain, they say, well, my house is not a historic structure. No, but it's part of a whole. And so it's important to hammer that point.
No, that is a great point. And in the pilot surveys that we're doing now, for example, we intentionally chose two sub-areas in the San Fernando Valley, both north of the 101 freeway, one in the West Valley, one in the East Valley. And these were post-World War II neighborhoods built from 1945 to 1960 or 65. And we chose those, first of all, a huge percentage of the city was built during that period of time. And as we work our way through the valley and the west side, we knew that that was going to give us an indication of how that would go when we rolled that out citywide. But also, we wanted to look at this very issue about historic districts, because in these neighborhoods, which are mostly single-family home neighborhoods, it's very unlikely that there are many individual homes that would rise to the level of being eligible for designation. But it is possible that some of these are the earliest post-World War II residential tracts that really shaped suburban development and created a prototype for Southern California and beyond. And our teams are, in fact, finding some very interesting tracts that could be eligible as districts in those areas. Some, again, the issue of discovery associated with significant architects that we had no idea had been involved with some of those neighborhoods.
Well, it was just this, again, the San Fernando Valley is coming to mind, because I think there's so many people who live in the valley who think, well, you know, there's really nothing historic here. Is this one of the challenges, is sort of changing people's perceptions even about, you know, where they live?
Oh, it is. And again, this is the first time the valley has been surveyed in a systematic way. And we do now have two HPOZs, two historic districts in the valley, one in Van Nuys, one in the Stonehurst neighborhood, a wonderful neighborhood of stone-clad bungalows in Sun Valley. The Eichler Tract, Balboa Highlands, is following on its heels, and that's close to being approved as an HPOZ. But it's interesting, I think in part because of the work of Adrian and the Modern Committee, we've been talking to homeowners that really have been approaching us as part of the survey process, wanting to be considered for the first time, or themselves doing education to think about their post-World War II neighborhoods in a new light, that it could be considered potentially as an HPOZ. But there is going to have to be a lot of outreach and follow-up, just because, again, it's identified in a survey doesn't mean there's going to be blind support to take that next step of designation. There's going to have to be that educational follow-up.
All right, Michael, did you want to say
something? Well, I just want to add one other point, and I already congratulated Ken earlier. The CD was bilingual, and I'm certainly a proponent of bilingualism, trilingualism, or more. And in my neighborhood, I'm seeing now, of course, many Asians moving in, so if the budget is there, it would really be a good idea to possibly do it in Chinese and Korean. There's a huge Korean community. And they certainly would be interested in this information.
And some of these neighborhoods that have seen a churning of populations and different groups coming in, the challenge will be to find maybe those who are older who have moved to other parts of town but have, you know, great historical knowledge of the communities where they grew up. And it may not be where they live now that they have the great knowledge, but where they were kids. And that's going to be a challenge as well. Mott?
Yeah, this to expand on an earlier theme, preservation has typically been complaint-driven in the city. And so the people who have been engaged in the effort of preservation, there are obviously lots of people, probably most of the people in this room, who like preservation because they love history and they love preservation. But too often, the debate is diminished because it happens, it's almost polluted by sort of a NIMBYism, a not-in-my-backyard approach to development. And I think that gives short shrift to preservation. And this survey challenges Los Angeles as a community to start thinking of preservation not as an anti-development thing, but as a self-discovery thing and as a historical continuity thing. And I think this marks a turning point, actually, in the history of Los Angeles, and that we're viewing it in this new way.
That's great. On that note, let's open this up for questions. And what I'd like to ask you to do, we have two folks in the audience with microphones. If you can easily get to the aisle after the person acknowledges you who has the microphone, that would be great. They can come up and put it. If you're not so mobile, that's okay. We can pass the microphone to you, because we want everybody potentially to be at least in the mix. We're not going to get to everybody's questions. We're going to do our best. Ask you to be as succinct as possible. Right to the point, and so we can get as many folks involved. I'm going to give up my seat. Catherine is going to come back up here, and she's also available to take your questions. All right, we have someone in the back. Is that correct? We have, or let's see, where we have a microphone next, right there. Yes, sir. Yes.
Yes. Hi. It was a great talk. Thank you. I also have a question. As a historian, I also sometimes have a problem with historical preservation because in some ways it seems inherently selective. So my question is this. In this sort of balance, I mean, what is the ultimate aim of preserving Los Angeles? Are we only trying to preserve what we want to remember as Los Angeles or the sort of mistakes of the past as well? Because I think of sort of super black, you know, subsidized housing as a mistake that in some ways on aesthetic grounds, no, we don't want to preserve it. But it is an important part of urban development, right? So at what point are important things that are worth preserving only decided upon aesthetic or cultural
ground? Great question. Ken, do you want to take that?
Sure, that is a great question. You know, the survey is likely to be identifying some of those, what you call mistakes of the past, as significant because, again, they may be found to have been reflective of important patterns in the growth and development of the city, whether it was a super block or examples of early, what we now think of as urban renewal. Some people think that post-World War II suburban development in the way that it played out in the San Fernando Valley as a whole was a mistake. But some of that was, I'm a Valley person, so I don't share that. But some of that may be found to be significant. But it's important to point out that the survey is not meant to freeze Los Angeles in place at a point in time. It's meant to provide information within which a discussion can be had around those very issues, and that kind of balancing can take place. How significant is this? Is it eligible for designation? What are our future goals in terms of planning or growth or economic development? The fact that a building or district is identified in a survey doesn't mean it's going to get preserved. It means that it's identified as potentially significant, and that's a tool that everyone in the process can take into account.
So you're figuring out what's there. It doesn't necessarily mean this is always going to be there, but at least we're getting an inventory of what we got. Adrian, did you want to say something on this? I thought I saw you moving toward. No, okay, all right.
Importantly, you know, as many of you know, documentation is often an adequate preservation strategy, particularly if the building is really detrimental.
Okay, another question. Trying to see where we have another microphone over here. All right, yes, sir.
Will the Historic Resource Survey project include information not only on buildings but also on resources where you can get information, such as libraries, organizations, university departments? And related to that, why is it that LA doesn't have an LA museum that could bring all this together?
Actually, there was someone here earlier who's working on that. I don't know if she's still here.
But great.
There is a group that is very much working on a city museum, because we are one of the few cities that doesn't have one. Well, while the survey is really focused on the built environment, kind of above ground historic resources and what's there today, we will be linking certainly to resources such as what can be found in libraries or other repositories, and we'll be working very closely with representatives from those sources of information to inform the survey project. But we're not trying to catalog all the archives. There are others, and I think Bill has been involved with some of those activities, and others who really are, and the Getty as well, really collecting the information on repositories, archival information, and other studies of Los Angeles.
Yeah, and I would just make a quick little plug that while there is no official Los Angeles History Museum, the LA County Museum of Natural History over in Expo Park, that's a really fine museum of the history of Los Angeles, in addition to the dinosaurs and the paleontology, et cetera. They have the Seaver.
Dinosaurs didn't live here.
Yeah, no. They have the Seaver Institute, or the Seaver Center, which is a wonderful library of Los Angeles documents. And then they have a great material culture collection, which is rotating in display all the time. So that amounts to one, whether or not Los Angeles will ever get mature enough as a city to actually have a freestanding museum is an open question. an expensive one.
Catherine.
And I'd like to invite anyone who would like to contact the Conservancy or the ModCom. We actually are a fantastic resource and have a tremendous archive of architectural information. And even if you have a question about something you think might be historic, please feel free to give us a call and we'll help you.
And also, as a part of the Getty's work, we compiled an extensive bibliography, both on the preservation aspects of the survey, as well as on the architectural and urban history of the city. And I've left some materials out there which have a number of URLs, the Getty URLs, and one of these is this bibliography. Carol Hahn, who was part of our team, helped assemble. It's really extensive and valuable and very focused. So, I completely agree with you about the need for a museum of the city of Los Angeles. It's just, as I was working on this, that was a vision, a dream that kind of kept coming through, and how vital and exciting that could be.
Yes, ma'am. Right here, please.
Yes, I worked the first survey of Los Angeles. And because of the city's liability, we could only do it from the sidewalk. Now, you're talking about talking to the people in the houses and the shops. Is that liability, has that insurance changed? The city changed that so that... Now, we could talk to the resident if we were invited into the house, but then we were on our own. That was our responsibility.
Perhaps I wasn't clear. We are not talking about going door to door and soliciting information from every resident in a neighborhood about their property. We are conducting the survey. Our survey teams will be conducting the survey from the public rights of way and not entering any person's private property. The difference is that we are intending to pursue this with a very active public participation program in advance of that survey work taking place, that we're reaching out to all the key organizations, whether it's, as I said, neighborhood councils or schools, as Michael mentioned, or other groups and individual homeowners, in advance of being out in the field so that we have a real understanding of significant resources in that area. But we're conducting it in much the same way.
Next question over on this side of the room. Ma'am, right down here, we'll get a microphone to you.
Hello. You know what the gentleman, I believe the USC professor, mentioned? Because it seems to me like most of you want to discuss the buildings, historic architecture, and so on. What about the people? Because to me, the people are just as important as the buildings. So if we don't, and piggybacking what the lady was saying, if we don't talk to people, then, and we just stand there and look at what we think is important to us, I don't think that's going to work very well. And also, we may not be able to get more historic facts because some people have more history than I might have, and I want to hear what they have to say. So when I talk to more people, as opposed to just looking at the outside of the building, I would get more information. A few years back, Mr. Hugh Hauser came to my community of Cypress Park. It's a small community. A gentleman from Lincoln Heights knows where that is. And he invited, well, not him, but it was also through the library.
Let me just interrupt. We need really concise. We get a lot of people involved.
Okay. So my question is, and my comment is, I would rather go talking to people more than just looking at the buildings, please. Thank you.
Excellent point. Who wants to respond to the...
Well, I would just say the survey is the opportunity to get those conversations going. The survey is going to be the multiplier by which people get together in various outreach facilities or outreach efforts, either directly affiliated with a survey, i.e. the survey coming to schools, et cetera, or neighborhood groups, neighborhood councils, et cetera, sponsoring dialogues about the history of a particular neighborhood. So the survey is a really good tool to do that.
I would just add, and Larry was asking earlier, what we need from all of you. It really is to partner with us to do just that, just what you stated, because we're doing a very large and ambitious citywide project. We have a very small staff of the Office of Historic Resources. I want to recognize Janet Hansen, who's our deputy manager of our office, who's really turned this into reality on a day-to-day basis, and Rita Moreno, who's been out in the hallway. But we're really the whole staff of the of Survey LA and the Office of Historic Resources, again, covering this huge city of 880,000 parcels. So it's going to take partnerships with neighborhoods, with community organizations, to put together that type of outreach in each area that we're talking to all the people, as you indicated, that we need to be talking to.
And Michael, you were talking about the kinds of conversations with your neighbors, with people in Lincoln Heights. It sounds like what you did with establishing this historic district did get people's conversations going about the history and the stories from the region.
Yeah, absolutely right. It was the first step, looking at the buildings, the environment. From there came the stories. So I agree with the woman and her comments, and that could be an extension of what we're doing now. Yeah.
And I think that's what we're seeing also in the Balboa Highlands Cycler Tract. Because it's something special, a lot of the owners have opened their doors to us, and we've learned there are a lot of unique people there, you know, the creator of Bullwinkle cartoons, to a concert violinist, to the art director of Batman, and there's oral histories going on through the San Fernando Valley Historical Society that I'm on the board of, as well as the Conservancy.
All right, yes, ma'am. Yes.
I'm a high school teacher, and I would like to know, how can I construct a project for my students? I guess Mr. Diaz would be the best person to talk to. How can I get my students involved? I would like to do this great project to help you guys, but I need help.
Yeah, great. Great.
This is like Wikipedia, it sounds like.
I would recommend that you contact instructor Aaron Kallenberg. He's the architecture instructor that we worked with at JFK High in Granada Hills, and I'd be happy to give you his number.
Okay, anyone else on the panel to add to that? No?
We're happy to talk with you, as long as we'll know what part of the city you're in and when we're coming to the area. We want to work directly with schools, as Michael was suggesting, and also partner youth with some of the existing organizations in the area. So, if you're interested in pursuing that, Janet or I would be happy to follow up with you.
Yes, ma'am, right here.
Could you explain the difference between the city planning section and the conservative, because they're two different organizations, two different...
LA Conservancy?
Yes.
Yes, and maybe it's confusing because I used to work for the Los Angeles Conservancy. The Conservancy is a countywide nonprofit historic preservation organization devoted to both education and advocacy around historic preservation issues. The Office of Historic Resources is the lead city agency, part of the Department of City Planning, for historic preservation in Los Angeles. And it is our office that is spearheading Survey LA in partnership with many others, including the Getty and the Conservancy.
Right. Ken, maybe I should add that Conservancy is a private,
private membership base. One
non-profit.
Can join
and the largest in the country.
And the largest in the country.
And yours is a city organization.
We're a city agency.
City agency.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, just a quick question. Has there been any consideration of using social media to organize? Because I know outside of just the neighborhood councils, there are a lot of people that maybe aren't directly connected to those, but that could be reached through Facebook or some of these social media tools, Meetup, et cetera.
No, that's great. And we've been talking about that, and we'd love to have your ideas. Interestingly enough, the city needs to, and city government needs to kind of get on board with social media sites. In fact, our information technology agency blocks city employees from actually using many of these sites, which is a whole other issue. I think we can get on some, but not others. So we may have to do it outside of the firewall of the city's information management systems.
All right. Yes, right back there.
Yes. Hi, I'm Laura Myers. The nonprofit organization I volunteer for has 25 years worth of probably 4 to 5 dozen individual histories of houses for each year, going back 25 years, and a huge amount of living history. We just walk through our Angeles Rosedale Cemetery routinely and say, oh, this guy's interesting, that woman's interesting. It seems to me that part of the approach you all need to do. One is identify really how to work with the historic preservation or historical societies, because it will be way too overwhelming for me to just sit down for 1 month, not 1 day, to get all that information to you. So how are you going to work with the societies? But also, you could walk through all of the city's old cemeteries, go backwards. Here's the interesting people. Where did they live?
Yeah, that's a great point. We are developing. We got a grant from the State Office of Historic Preservation this year, what's called a Certified Local Government Grant, to develop the public participation program further for Survey LA and create what we're calling a My Historic LA Guide to Participation in this project. And we will be able to work with whether it's a historic preservation organization or a homeowners or residents group or a business group, be able to, within a few months when this is completed, give over a template for how to provide information, for how to kind of distill what you already have in your community and provide it to us in a format and form that is most relevant and useful for Survey LA. And so this will be coupled with our rollout of the project citywide. I think that will be at least somewhat helpful to provide some guidance so you know where to start. It doesn't seem overwhelming. Having said that, many groups are already giving us a tremendous amount of information. In Tahunga, for example, a group of residents and historical society got together and already gave us a voluminous list of historic housing, historic homes in that neighborhood. There's a group here today from Los Feliz that gave us about 25 pages worth of information on historic architecture, potential landmarks, architect design homes, and homes associated with important residents and celebrities. So there's a lot that's out there, a lot that you all have already from past tours and past oral histories and past activities, and we just need to find a way to kind of corral that and provide it in a way that that makes the most sense.
I think we better get close to wrapping up. We'll take one more question. I'm sorry, we just we're getting a little bit short on time, and then I want to wrap up with sort of walking through the timeline of this. So, ma'am, your question, please.
Given LA's somewhat of a history, at least, of sort of dead in the night demolitions, are you working with Building and Safety at all to give you a heads up if anybody's seeking permits on something that might be historic?
We do, through ZMIS, we do have properties flagged already. The properties that are designated already, we work very closely with Building and Safety, and there are properties that are flagged, so they can't be demolished in the dead of night. I think there's a policy discussion that's going to have to happen at a city council level, ultimately, as to how we want to treat these surveyed properties. And Mott got into that a little bit with his discussion about the California Environmental Quality Act. We don't have time to get into all of that. The question of do we want to, in fact, flag in some way all properties that are surveyed as significant, that goes farther than just a review under the California Environmental Quality Act. And so there's some policy discussions I think will happen as the survey progresses in the next couple of years about how do we want to use this information, how do we coordinate review at the city level.
Well, and Mott, think of all the money you'll save not having to get those bulldozers in the middle of the night.
I know. Because you got to pay time and a half. Actually, could I throw out one important thing, just another hopeful, positive thing about this, which is there's been sort of two ways to look at planning in Los Angeles. There's saving the old stuff, and there's starting with a clean slate on the new stuff. And something that we've missed in our forward-looking planning efforts is connecting directly to the past. We haven't talked about that on the panel yet, but I just wanted to throw that idea out there. Such an important thing that planners today do not have the tools to know what to put in the community plans to make tomorrow's buildings fit into the context of yesterday's buildings. And one of the things that I am most hopeful about with the survey is that it will provide that context that allows people to plan forward without thinking that they're starting from a blank slate.
Well, and is that going to work in just having raw data, or are you going to really be looking at narratives that contextualize what the data show about given neighborhoods?
It's a great question, and I turn to the historians for the narrative aspect, but there are technical elements of the buildings that are relevant. I don't think the survey is looking at these yet, but it's things as simple as what are the prevailing setbacks, what are the prevailing heights, what are the prevailing stylistic elements, what are the entries like, things like this that could start to be illuminated through this.
And one thing we're just
there's also a danger to that. I think the danger is that, yes, maybe connect to the past, but not mimic the past.
Right.
Because I think we need, if there's going to be new construction, we need to create the next era, the next generation of buildings, the next generation of architecture.
Well, San Francisco to me is a prime example of this, where you've got this incredible historic architecture, but there's really been very little room for new architecture. So San Francisco is like a museum city, which I love it. I love going there, but it is that sort of frozen in time, where Los Angeles really has a chance, it seems to me, to be the best of both worlds, to have the things that are really special preserved, but to give opportunities for interesting design and architecture to express itself here.
Yeah, I can't tell you how often I see architects' drawings of buildings that are proposed that don't actually show the context. And so I think I totally agree with Michael that we don't want to become prescriptive and nostalgic, but we do need to become informed about where we're building.
Yeah. And this could be. And I would say, Catherine,
in working on the survey from the beginning, a real point of view on this was the need to reinforce and reestablish a tradition of great architecture, a tradition of good architecture. And the DNA of Los Angeles is innovation. It is eclecticism. It is try it out. And, you know, just as you were talking about, you kind of have to have a framework, but you have to allow creativity and nimbleness. I love the term nimble. And that really was what this was all about.
And that's what I like about my neighborhood, that it is eclectic. There is a neighborhood in Los Angeles, I won't name, that's every single home is Victorian. And it is like a museum. Lincoln Heights is not that way. So, and I think
oh, you HPOZs.
So I would like to see, like in our neighborhood and in my HPOZ, some really new, innovative construction.
Absolutely,
you're gonna be hearing from the Angeleno Heights people.
Rick Caruso's on the phone right now to yell at him.
I'm surprised you're not hearing back. Yeah,
Bill. The question reminds me that, as daunting as the survey is, and I think we'd all agree that it's a daunting project to document what's there, it might behoove the survey to have at least a whisper of being able to listen to people talk about what's no longer there.
Yeah.
So Catherine mentioned, you know, what's been removed since the legislation in the early 60s to now. And the survey is undoubtedly going to reveal some of that when people say, well, that's no longer there.
Yeah.
And just taking that note a little bit about what isn't there any longer could be very, very useful too.
All right. To wrap up, Ken, can you briefly walk us through? Now, what comes next? What is the general timeline of events? What should we be looking for?
Right. Well, we are well underway now with our pilot surveys, three pilot surveys in five sub-areas of the city, and we're kind of testing the methodology, everything from the hardware and the software that we're using, the use of this citywide historic context statement that we tried to explain earlier, the public participation activities. All of this is underway currently. Today is really the kickoff of our public participation activities, looking ahead to the first of 3 years of the implementation of this project, the rollout of the project citywide. We very much hope that we can stay on schedule. Our schedule through our grant agreement with the Getty is that we have a 3-year implementation phase. Once we begin the actual field surveys, we will have survey teams on the ground. I think we're realistically still several months away because we need to get into all those communities and begin the public participation efforts that we've talked about here today before we put kind of boots on the ground in those neighborhoods. But the grant agreement with the Getty is that it is a 3-year phasing. And we have linked the rollout of this project to the development of the community plans of the city. Los Angeles is divided into 35 community plans that are basically the land use constitution, how shape growth and development in the city. And what we want to do is have our survey results inform the development of those community plans to really link preservation and planning in a way that we haven't in the past, so that when we are doing planning and proposing areas for change, we know where those proposals might affect historic resources in an adverse way or where we might take advantage of opportunities. So we will be working with you. You can look at the phasing plan that we have for the project, what's going to be year 1, year 2, and year 3
on a poster out in the hallway. And again, today we want to begin to catch. We don't want any of you to leave today without telling us at least one resource that represents my historic LA, historic LA.
What we couldn't take everybody's questions, and I'm sure there are people who have things they really want answered. How should they go about getting questions, or ones that come up after they leave here, to whom should they send an email, or where can they turn?
You can do that. We have a lot of volunteers out in the hallway. You can also sign up to be a volunteer or be a neighborhood coordinator. Go to surveyla.org. You can send us messages through the website at surveyla.org. Again, Janet Hansen is here. I'll give you, Janet, if it's okay to give your number.
Janet, can you stand up just so we can see who you are? So, okay, great.
Janet is available at 213-978-1191. Or you can, again, send us an email through the website. But again, today we want you to, not leave until you've told us about a hidden gem, a place that you think is not well known and should be considered. And that will really help us kick off our survey activity in neighborhoods throughout the city.
I want to thank our panel. Tremendous contributions from all of you. You care about your neighborhoods and your areas of expertise and the mission of this. Thank you all very much.
Aloud Audio is presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles and made possible through support provided by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Annenberg Foundation, City National Bank, contributors to the Stay Home and Read a Book Ball, and Donna and Martin J. Wolf. Media support provided by KUSC 91.5 FM and KCET. Aloud theme composed by Larry Karish.